It is time for our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, ladies and gentlemen. Sparking global changes. And this one, ladies and gentlemen, will be another thought-provoking conversation because this one can spark real changes in Jamaica. What am I talking about, ladies and gentlemen? Well, the Constitution Amendment Republic Bill of 2024 was tabled in the Jamaican Parliament on December 16th. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the first legal step in the process of reforming the Constitution to establish Jamaica as a republic. The big question is, though, what is in this bill? And we will pose that question to Professor and Dr. Rosalie Hamilton, Founding Director, Institute of Law and Economics. I welcome the lovely professor to Grooving Radio. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I am doing well. Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
Happy New Year to you, Professor. How did you spend your New Year, Professor?
Continuing to deepen my understanding of the challenges we face in Jamaica generally, mm-hmm. and with respect to the Constitution in particular. So, mm-hmm. I have been, working throughout the holiday.
Indeed. Well, we're ready for this conversation here on Grooving Radio this Saturday morning. The Constitution Amendment Republic Bill of 2024. It was tabled in the Jamaican Parliament, on December 10th, ladies and gentlemen. It is the first legal step in the process of reforming the Constitution to establish Jamaica as a republic. We want to know, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, the question is, what is in this bill?
Well, there are several things in the bill. I think the most important one that your listeners, I'm sure, are aware of is we are removing the British monarch as head of state. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we absolutely think it's high time to do that. So we're at that point where we're beginning that conversation. And, of course, replacing the head of state with a Jamaican president. Mm-hmm. Importantly, the current Jamaica Constitution order in council is now changed. They have agreed to adopt a second schedule of the Constitution, and that's the part of the Constitution that has all the main provisions in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And importantly, that will now become domestic law. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of repatriating the Constitution as it is referred to, and we're really setting up a law that is now going to be passed by our parliament, and now we will have a domestic law, which is our constitution. Right now, what we have is an order in council. So mm-hmm. that's done. Importantly, there are provisions now to entrench the Electoral Commission of Jamaica. Many of us have been proposing that we do that for some time now. Institutions of the state that seeks to protect our rights and so on, that we think should be also in the Constitution. Integrity Commission being one, mm-hmm. lots of controversies there, but we think that should have the protection of the Constitution, mm-hmm. and also the Office of the Public Defender and so on. Mm-hmm. But the electoral office is in. There are issues, of course, having to do with provisions to make it truly independent. So that's something to be discussed. But other things in the bill have to do with modification of the rules of citizenship rights and the legislative processes that are important in, changing the Constitution, etc. Mm-hmm. And also, importantly, the formalization and recognition of national symbols, emblems, and so on. So that's also part of the Jamaicanizing the Constitution, that grounds it and formalizes it. There are, of course, some issues there having to do with the retention of some colonial relics, and people should note that, because while you know, we want to kind of formalize these national symbols and make them Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
We have the coat of arms that's rooted in a 1661 colonial Great Seals. I don't know if you're familiar with that piece of history, all the way back to in the 1600s. And of course, significantly, it was part of the coat of arms of the Royal African Company.
Mm.
So that's troubling.
Mm.
And those are, you know, they're still there. But nonetheless, we're moving towards those kind of iconic symbols that recognize us of Jamaica. And importantly, also things like our anthem and motto and those kinds of stuff. So all of that is there.
Right.
But for me, and what I captured in this article is, while there are some good things, and, you know, I've hinted at some of the good things that are there, the major, major flaw, and the thing that really should, you know, be the focus of our observation, discussion, review, analysis of this bill, is the retention of the parliamentary cabinet system of governance.
Ah, before...
And that's really the elephant in the room.
Okay.
What does that actually mean? And is that in the best interest of the Jamaican people?
Okay, before we get to the elephant in the room, I just want to backtrack a little bit. And I want to go back up to where the bill will repeal the Jamaican Constitution Order of Council of 1962. Now, that constitution, to your knowledge, Professor, has that constitution ever been changed or remodified over the years? And what was actually changed, if there were any changes in that 1962 Order of Council?
Perhaps the most important change was the 2011 replacement of Chapter 3 with the Charter of Fundamental Rights and Freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
That is arguably the most significant change that has taken place. Now, there are several changes, small changes, including the most recent one having to do with the DPP,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So there have been small changes. We, for example, in 2015, including provisions to include the local government for the first time in our constitution. Up to 2015, we did not have local government recognized in the constitution.
Wow!
So there have been several changes, and perhaps the most important one was that 2011. But there have been several along the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, removal of the British monarchy as head of state of Jamaica, which, as you rightfully say, and many are saying, this is long overdue. Now, with the current Jamaica Labour Party in power, what role can or will the opposition be able to play in all of this?
Sorry, repeat that. I didn't quite hear.
Okay, so the ruling government in Jamaica currently, who is looking at this bill to be changed, is the Jamaica Labour Party. What role does the opposition People's National Party, what role do they have to play in all of this?
Well, the opposition is part of the government. And the opposition ultimately have a vote,
mm-hmm.
as the process goes through Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, there are several steps that need to be taken. And the steps include the reading of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that is currently what is on the table now.
Mm-hmm.
That will take place for about a three-month period.
Mm-hmm.
This is required by the entrenchment provisions in the Constitution under Section 49.
Mm-hmm.
And for a period of 3 months, the bill is introduced in Parliament. And then after 3 months, there will be a discussion, the debate,
mm-hmm.
of the first.
Mm-hmm.
So the debate starts in Parliament. Of course, we have opposition parliamentarians, and they are going to be involved in that debate.
Mm-hmm.
The debate will take place for about 3 months,
mm-hmm.
and then it will be submitted There's another 6 months period maximum mm-hmm. that the bill will be submitted. There'll be discussions in both houses,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And it's during this period of the discussions and the period of the referendum
mm-hmm.
that we ultimately the people get involved. But mm-hmm. throughout that 6 months passage in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
The opposition will be involved in the discussion.
Indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes. And as you heard Marvin Gaye ask the question, what's going on? Well, in Jamaica, the Constitution Amendment Republic Bill was tailored in the Jamaican Parliament on December 10th. This is a move to remove the monarchy as head of state of Jamaica and name a president as the leader of Jamaica. Now, what my special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. and Professor Rosalie Hamilton. She is no stranger to Grooving Radio. She is the founding director of Institute of Law and Economics. Now, what kind of president would this bill present Jamaica with, Professor? What kind of president?
Well, according to the bill, mm-hmm. you know, the president, there's a process in which the president will be selected. And it finally boils down to a process in which the prime minister will have his way.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we look at that whole process of discussions with the opposition, there is a section which it speaks to, for example, to the extent to which the opposition disagrees with what the prime minister presents,
mm-hmm.
then there is a period in which the I think it's a 2 month period. I have to go back and check.
Mm-hmm.
There's a period in which, if there is no agreement, the prime minister gets his or her nominee.
Mm-hmm.
So although there is a process in which the prime minister have discussions with the opposition leader, in the final analysis, the prime minister does get his or her way.
Mm. This comes with consequences. This comes with trouble. You mentioned the most consequential and troubling aspect of this bill, the retention of parliamentary cabinet system of government. You want to talk about the elephant in the room now?
Hmm? Yes. Well, you know, I think Jamaicans ought to be aware of what we have in fact inherited, what referred to this parliamentary cabinet system of government, and we have to just think about it in terms of our own history. So prior to 1962, what we had was a system of government that was dominated by a governor, and essentially a lot of power was in the hands of that governor.
Mm-hmm.
The governor shaped law by its dominance of the arrangements in Parliament,
mm-hmm.
They were men, and the extent to which the execution of these laws, of course, was in the hands of the governor
mm-hmm.
as part of the executive of the country. And so by 62, what we had in the written constitution is the movement of that power essentially in the hands of the prime minister and cabinet. And what is significant and what I raised in the article is that the debates in parliament at the time raised the concern about the power that was vested in the prime minister in light of the provisions of the constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And I highlighted the fact that Wilson Isaac referred to created a prime minister that would be a dictator for 5 years.
Mm.
And that in this the conversation and the discussion Edward Jagger, who was in the opposition at the time, talked about only one minister must rule at a time. And that came out of the conversation that said, if there's any disagreement with the prime minister, how would that be resolved, kind of thing. And he said, well, only one minister must rule. And so what it did was, from inception, in a very deliberate way, because we have to think that, you know, those concerns that existed then could have been changed by very explicit provisions to provide the kind of oversight and accountability of cabinet decisions and the decisions of the prime minister. But that was not done. And so we would have to conclude that this was a deliberate design, very consciously, to ensure that the prime minister and the cabinet has his or her way with respect to the shaping law and executing the law. And so it is this dominance of cabinet decisions and the executive in parliament that we have inherited that is truly a concern, and that must be changed if we really want to move the republic
right
in which the Jamaican people are sovereign.
You know, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, it's amazing that this would come up in this conversation, because here is something that I have been saying for years on radio, that the Prime Minister of Jamaica, whoever it is at any time currently, has more power in his or her country than the president have here in the United States of America. You mentioned a word there, dictator. And that word has been popping up over the last couple of, I would say probably 2-3 years in Jamaica, in the media here, in conversations here in the diaspora, about how Jamaica is being run. And you know, it's funny. Go back to 1962, and this conversation was, it happened then. Yeah, one minister at a time, and his government, and his, it's kind of troubling. It's kind of troubling because, you know, when you watch the rise of dictators around the world, especially the rise of an individual such as Adolf Hitler, and see how they come to power, and how they come to take over, and run their establishment, it brings you now where, folks, we have to pay close attention, and we should have been paying close attention to how our little island, our little country of Jamaica was being run. It's 63 years ago. This year will mark 63 years since Jamaica gained political independence. And I'm now wondering, how long from now on, for how long from now, you think this would take for Jamaica to become a republic? With this bill tabled in Parliament, is there any timeline to this, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, in terms of when, how this is going to get done in Jamaica? Any timeline?
Well, the constitutional guideline with respect to the bill going through Parliament, by the way, I should have made the point that it is in the Senate that ultimately, because of the majority in the House of Representatives, it's in the Senate that the opposition will have an opportunity to be felt, because then they would are likely to, for all that we've heard, likely to oppose the bill because of the absence of the court, moving away from the British Privy Council. And the leader of the opposition recently talked about the absence of provisions having to do with governance and accountability, etc. So we are hoping that, that's what it means, is that he will, and the opposition will, take on the issues that we are raising with respect to this elephant in the room. And we have to wait for further details to hear exactly what the opposition means. But what will happen is, at the end of the discussions in Parliament,
Professor,
it has to pass before we get to the referendum period. And that referendum period It's a 6 month period,
mm-hmm.
and the vote now goes to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So the extent to which changes will exist, and that we get different provisions that we vote on,
mm-hmm.
that is left to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to say that these changes that are implied in, getting a more accountable government and getting the kinds of oversight mechanisms and mechanisms that will give the Jamaican people a voice,
mm-hmm.
will take time.
Mm-hmm.
And the first step is what you're doing, which is to be part of a public education program,
mm-hmm.
where Jamaicans at home and abroad,
mm-hmm.
truly understand what it means to be run or to retain a system of government that was never set up for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was set up as part of the colonial arrangement to perpetuate the interests of a few and to perpetuate the domination of the majority of the Jamaican people. Now, we have to be very thoughtful of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
What will constitution look like,
mm-hmm.
that truly provides the kinds of freedom and opportunities for self-determination,
mm-hmm.
that we need for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
We did not get that at the independence, in
mm-hmm.
that constitutional arraignment.
Mm-hmm.
We got some improvements with respect to the provisions, with respect to rights in the Chapter 3 along the way. But right now, we must look again at the structure of government. And I think that's what is on the table. We need a different structure of government that can deliver different outcomes.
Mm. You know, you talk about accountability, and one of the things that we hear in the diaspora, and I'm sure that there are Jamaicans on the ground in Jamaica, have been asking for is transparency and accountability of our government. And you know, again, we must pay very, very close attention, folks, and we must be a part of this, you know. And I'm happy that you mentioned the public discourse here, the public education part of this. And I'm just going to ask my brothers and sisters, wherever they are in the media world, whether you're on radio, whether you write for a newspaper, whether you're on television, make this now a part of the conversation. Make this constitutional reform bill a part of your conversation going forward in 2025. A bill has been tabled in Parliament in Jamaica, ladies and gentlemen. It is a step to remove the monarchy as leader of government in Jamaica. But the general public must be informed. And I also think, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, that this should be taken into the school system in Jamaica. You know, it doesn't matter what part of the school system. We cannot go forward without including Jamaicans on the ground, Jamaicans in the diaspora. When I say the diaspora mean anywhere overseas where Jamaicans gather. We should be involved with this, because it is said, you know, Professor, and I don't know, I would love to hear your thoughts on this one. It is said that when Jamaica gained political independence in 1962, many Jamaicans, probably about 85% or a little bit more of the Jamaican population, did not understand what they were getting. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's true, because there's certain evidence that there was not extensive discussion. In fact, it was rushed through to meet the British timeline.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in a conversation with Edward Seaga, I remember I asked him about that, and he said, yes. He said, boy, they were all under pressure to get to London within a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So there was very little conversation. There was certainly no extensive effort to get to the Jamaican people to engage any kind of discussion and public education about what this process is.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, that has been the concern with this process, that
mm-hmm.
we seem to have been certainly initially repeating the same thing.
Mm.
Now, while the Constitutional Reform Committee did make an effort and did a public appearance, I think the extensive nature of the conversation was just not there. It was not added. Mm-hmm. For example, I have been talking to communities up and down Jamaica, mm-hmm. and the community members are hungry for a deeper understanding about how this constitution will affect them. They're concerned about community development. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think the diaspora has a very, very important role to play.
Mm-hmm.
How does the constitutional change affect the very communities they are from?
Mm-hmm.
Will it make them better off?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the conversation that I think is absolutely necessary. While there are provisions in the constitution dealing with local government, these must be enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be strengthening community rights. For example, provisions speaking to getting local communities involved in the municipal decisions and so on, and activities,
mm-hmm.
is weak because of one important point. There's
right.
no definition of a local government, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to fix things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Define what a local government, a local community means, sorry,
mm-hmm.
no definition of local communities, and provide the kind of rights
mm-hmm.
that enable communities to, for example, engage entrepreneurial activities
mm-hmm.
that can provide the kind of developmental opportunities that many, many communities need across Jamaica. And
mm-hmm.
this is where the diaspora has an important role in providing the kinds of resources that can develop community assets
mm-hmm.
and generate the community businesses to create the goods and services and create income that can lead to community development. So it's very, very important that the community, that the diaspora get involved in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is important perspectives and insights that diasporans can bring to the conversation about strengthening local government and strengthening community.
Indeed. Program note, ladies and gentlemen, once again, you're listening to Groovin Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. The conversation this morning, constitution reform in Jamaica. There is a bill now in Parliament to actually lead Jamaica to a republic. How long it's going to take, we just don't know yet, but we have to have this conversation. This bill will repeal the Jamaican Constitution Order of Council of 1962 and remove the monarchy as head of state, and Jamaica would ultimately have a president. My very, very special guest this morning, ladies and gentlemen, is Rosalie Hamilton, Dr. Rosalie Hamilton. She is the founding director, Institute of Law and Economics, ladies and gentlemen. You know, Professor, I think deep all the time, and sometimes I think I'm thinking too deep. I go too much into my own knowledge box, and I am now thinking that we have been manipulated. We as a people, we have been manipulated. And I was in Jamaica, the last time I was in Jamaica was October of 2024. And while I sat there, at Round Hill, I said to myself, I'm looking out on the beautiful waters of Jamaica, the beautiful sunshine. And I says, wow, the colonizers are back. They're back. And this time, they're back as investors. And we should be very, very mindful and be very careful of how we move forward. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that thinking pattern that I have, you know, to say that we have been manipulated. The colonizers are back, and they're back in Jamaica and the Caribbean as investors. I see BlackRock now in Jamaica. BlackRock in Jamaica. And I ask, who are these people? Who are some of these people coming into Jamaica, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, buying up Jamaica, taking over our music, and all of these things? They don't look like us. And that's why I know that the colonizers are back, and they're back as investors. Your thoughts before I go into the Maroons, Professor Rosalie Hamilton?
Well, it's important to know that foreign investors have never left Jamaica. They've always been there. There are many of our assets, bauxite and so on, certainly the tourism industry that is in the hands of foreign investment. I think while there is a role for foreign investors mm-hmm. to help the development of Jamaica, mm-hmm. the question has to always be, what are the terms? What mm-hmm. are the terms mm-hmm. of engagement?
Mm-hmm.
Are you investing in the things that will help us to develop? Are you helping to create the kinds of goods and services that we can export and earn mm. our way in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Are you building on the talents and skills we have mm-hmm. as a people mm-hmm. so that we can develop? And it's not simply an investment that is extractive.
Mm-hmm.
Foreign dollars continue to leave the country. And I think it's through those lens we have to interrogate this idea of continued domination.
Yeah.
Because we're not passive in this interaction.
Mm-hmm.
We can shape policy such that investment comes in areas that we want them to come by way of focus. In fact, I recall a few years or so, maybe last year, when our Minister of Finance, our Minister Clark, pointed to the fact that he wanted only investment at the scale of, or he wanted investment only at the scale of these billion US dollars mm. into that state. And it struck me, what were the criteria? Is it just any $1 billion investment, or that go into critical areas like our education system,
mm-hmm.
like in arts and culture and sports and these areas where we do it well and we need help to do more, to do better.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the kinds of issues that we have to look at. Our policy, because that's what we have control over,
mm-hmm.
right? What is the policy framework? Do we have systems in place such that the voice of Jamaicans living overseas have a plan to shape the kinds of policies that will affect the people in the communities from which they live on.
Mm.
That's the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And in that sense, we do want foreign investment. We do want investment from our diaspora that can help to build what we're trying to do here in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument is not against those investments. It's the nature and type of investments and the terms of engagement when we are attracting and spending foreign dollars.
Key word there, the terms, because I've seen too many people, too many investors pull out of Jamaica, and when they leave Jamaica, they leave these monstrous properties, just look like a ghost town. Nothing there, just abruptly shut down, and them gone about them business, and they don't care about what they left behind. They're out of there and they're on their own. Now,
these are good examples, if I may, of this kind of top-down governance, because
mm-hmm.
it is when a few people, we've seen it in the Sligoville Stadium, we've mm-hmm. seen it in all kinds of places, where a politician dominantly makes that decision
mm-hmm.
and with no discussion and no interaction, no significant interaction with the community, such that it becomes a community decision
mm-hmm.
and we agree that this is what we want. Because if that was the case, these properties, these assets that we now see as white elephants would be fully utilized mm-hmm. by the very people
mm-hmm.
who wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want just to inject that point, because that is the legacy of the kind of top-down approach to governance and decision-making and mm-hmm. policy-making mm-hmm. that has led us to where we are today.
Indeed. Professor Rosalie Hamilton, as we continue this thought-provoking conversation, Native Jamaicans, as they call them, indigenous people of Jamaica, the Maroons, let's talk about where the Maroons will fit in these new constitutional changes, because I am not sure if the Maroons were ever included in anything that Jamaica, in terms of political independence and the constitution that came out of Buckingham Palace, order in council in 1962. I don't know if the Maroons had any role or had any provision in any of that. Where are we today as we talk about constitutional changes in Jamaica? Where does the Maroon stand in all of this?
Well, you know, like all of us, like most of us, the Maroons were not included in terms of engagement with respect to our earlier constitution. I can't say I know specifically whether they were excluded in this round, because I know that there were submissions made, and I don't recall seeing if there was any submission made on the part of Maroons. Maybe they were. I'm not sure. However, the specificity or the clarity with which the submissions were accepted or rejected was never clear. That was an issue that I raised with respect to the report that was submitted to Parliament, that many of us, including the Advocates Network, which I'm a part, made a submission. But it's not clear how it's treated, what was accepted, what was rejected, why it was rejected. Mm-hmm. And that would be helpful going forward, because at least one understands why certain things are excluded. For example, the CRC and the leadership of the CRC, the minister, made the point and keeps making the point that some of these changes belong in a second or a third phase. Mm-hmm. But the clarity of that phase is not there, and the direction of the phase is not there. So it's a black box. We're not clear where we're going. Mm-hmm. And whether issues, for example, having to do with the Maroons would be held at a later date. So there, it's in the context of that confusion, these issues have to be aired and discussed. Mm-hmm. Because they can't be put on the back burner. Mm-hmm. and the statement is, oh, we will get to it, as I've heard. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's adequate, because the governance issues are an imperative issue today, mm-hmm. not tomorrow. And they ought to be on the front burner of this constitutional change. Mm-hmm. So with respect to the Maroons, I would say, obviously, they have to shape, influence those decisions. It's their culture, their reality, and so on. Mm-hmm. I would want to suggest, however, that the Maroons engage this conversation we are all having at the level of the communities about how community can build more autonomy. Mm-hmm. How the communities can have more say in their development, and in so far as there are provisions that enable much more participatory governance, mm-hmm. In communities across Jamaica, then I think Maroon Town and all of the Maroon Harrison communities can clearly benefit. Mm-hmm. But of course, I know that those issues affecting the Maroon goes way beyond specific issues of territorial ownership and boundaries and so on. And mm-hmm. so those issues have to be worked out.
Mm. You know, I do wish, one of the wish that I've always have, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, is, you know, when they're having these grand events in Jamaica, these big events in Jamaica where thousands and thousands of people show up, I always say that there should be an educational part attached to these events. So even if it only take 5 minutes for folks to mention on stage some of these things that are happening, like this very important thing that is happening now about this bill that was tailored in Parliament, there are events happening across Jamaica. At the end of the year, at the beginning of the year, and you know, I know it's a Roman circus, because I call it a Roman circus because that's how they keep the people them distracted and not focused. And it's just a wish that it's just a wish that I have, because we have used events that we have done here, and we make sure that we mention stuff that are germane to our people and important to our people. And I do hope that, you know, someone down there, someone up there, across there, is listening to us and said, you know what, that's a good idea. Let's spend 5 minutes at these events and just remind the people how important voting is. Let's remind the people of how important this constitutional reform bill and what they need to know and what they should do. And I do hope I do hope that those who are involved in this don't leave anyone out this time around. And I do hope that, you know, Network, the Advocate Network and other watchdog groups in Jamaica, you know, I hope they're lining up to ensure that they keep, they try their very best to ensure that they hold government feet to the fire this time around in terms of this bill and make sure the right thing is done when it comes to this bill. You know, there's something important that was in our constitution from back then, and it was abrupt. It was just quietly changed over the years. And just to show you how things happen and people don't realize what happened, you know, the old saying that every Jamaican who was born in Jamaica before August 6, 1962 were known as British subject. And they could have gone to the British High Command and they could have gotten their British passport and they could travel back and forth to Great Britain comfortably. That was just quietly changed one day, and folks didn't even realize that it happened. Folks, these are the little things that happens and you don't know. Don't let it happen again. Don't let things happen that, you know, you're not abreast of these situations, Professor. Huh? What would you say? And I know we're doing our part here at Grooving Radio, at Irie Jam Radio, to keep the community informed and educated. But what do you think? How should we move forward now with this Constitution Reform Bill? How should we engage everyone? What should we do? I know I'm starting here.
Yes, absolutely. This is an important opportunity to deepen the public education about the importance of a constitution, what it means, what we want, and importantly, how it will affect our lives. Jamaicans, like all people, are concerned about the quality of their life, their living standards. Mm-hmm. There is a relationship between a constitutional framework and economic development. And I think one just has to think back about the constitution we've inherited with respect to this legal constitutional framework that perpetuated a system of slavery and colonialism for a long time. It was a legal framework that did that. And so one has to think about it in those terms. What is the legal framework that we need to ensure that the majority of the Jamaican people can live in the kinds of, uplift their standard of living. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really the issue on the table for me. I am concerned about the economic well-being of our people. That is the loud cry of Jamaicans. That is why so many people have left Jamaica to live across the world in the diaspora, because of the standard of living. They want to bring their children up in the best environment, and they've gone abroad to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why this conversation is so important, because we have an opportunity now to think again about this legal framework. Mm-hmm. In fact, our government promised that this would be the most meaningful and comprehensive constitutional reform process since independence. Mm-hmm. I think if to hold them to that terminology, that's their terminology, if we want to hold them to that, and I agree fully with it, that is what it ought to be, right? I think we have to get to these root core issues, and they get to a structure of government that can deliver what the Jamaican people want, that can raise the standard of living, that can enable the freedom and the self-determination. That's about the right to make decisions about the kinds of communities we want to live in, the kinds of education system that we want, that will give us a best shot at surviving and thriving and growing in this highly competitive world economy. So that is what is at stake. And I think that the most important thing that we can do is engage this process of dialogue, education, information sharing.
Well, we start here in the Grooving Radio Knowledge Room every Saturday morning right here on Irie Jam Radio from 9 a.m. until 12 noon. We're living in a rapidly changing world. And, you know, if you should have mentioned something about authoritarian government in Jamaica since 1962, folks probably look at you and say, you're crazy. But you mentioned a name there, and you mentioned it quite a few times, Edward George Philip Seaga. And folks might be saying, Mr. Seaga was around in politics in 1962. Yes, folks. He was a young 20-something-year-old politician. I think he was one of the youngest, if not the youngest, politician.
He was the youngest.
Yeah, at the time, you know. So blinds have been around a long time, a very, very long time. And he has played some roles in Jamaica that, you know, I could start a new conversation about even when Lightburn was, when Donald Sangster died and Lightburn was named prime minister, and Edward Seaga and his crony says, we don't want him. We want Hugh Shearer. I mean, he has played some critical role in shaping Jamaica, you know, and I'm going to do a program on that one day. As I talk about the rapidly changing world that we're living in, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, we're going to put our brakes on the conversation there, and I'm going to ask you, please, for a closing statement. And I just want to thank you. Thank you so much, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. Whenever I call, you answer. When you can, you do. And it makes me, I'm very grateful. I am very thankful of you. People like you, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, who's always there and always willing to inform and educate our listening audience. So thank you very much as I ask you for your closing statement, Professor.
Well, thank you. In turn, you know, you've done your part in, you know, bringing these important issues to the attention of the diaspora and Jamaicans who are listening as well. I just want to say in closing that, you know, our future belongs to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Our children deserve a better future than we've given them so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot can happen if more and more Jamaicans get actively involved in this conversation,
mm-hmm.
and make their voices heard with respect to the kinds of changes that we want. Importantly,
mm-hmm.
we will not all get what we want.
Mm-hmm.
We have to forge consensus, and we have to do it in a way that we have to presume, that mm-hmm. most of us want to go in a direction that will uplift the standard of living of all of us, and will lift the quality of life of all of us.
Mm.
And so if we can agree that's the direction we're going, let's be patient with our differences because there are many.
Mm-hmm.
And let's agree that coming out of this extensive conversation, we can end up with constitutional provisions
mm-hmm.
that we can support and that we can that will enable us to build that better future. It will not all be done in one grand sweep. It will take time, but if we agree on the broad directions that we're going, I think we can get there.
Indeed. I thank you.
I don't have to convince you or your audience that we are the greatest people in the world.
Indeed.
And anything is possible.
Indeed.
Indeed. So we can do it.
Indeed. Professor Dr. Rosalie Hamilton, Founding Director, Institute of Law and Economics, thank you so much. Happy New Year and all the best for 2025. I think we kicked it off on the right foot, Professor. We will continue our conversation throughout the year. Huh?
Thank you so much for having me as usual.
One love.
Thank you.
One love, Professor. Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes. The conversation this morning, Constitution Reform in Jamaica. A bill was tabled in Parliament on December 10th, and this is the first legal step in the process of reforming the Constitution to establish a Jamaica as a republic, ladies and gentlemen, removing the monarchy as head of state, and Jamaica will have a president. My name is Ras Clem, and this is Grooving Radio.